Welcome to this week's Third Opinion Podcast. This week we will focus on the horrendous events in D.C. last week as two members of the Israeli embassy were killed in cold blood. We'll also hear from the Israeli ambassador to the United States, not only about the shooting, but also the fears of Iran and its nuclear capability. That and so much more. And don't forget, you can get your third opinion wherever you download your podcasts. And now, this week's Third Opinion Podcast. Good afternoon, or good evening, or good morning, whenever you're listening to us. This is the Third Opinion, Two Jews, Three Opinions on WKDW in the podcast. I'm Mike Deason.
This is Lorene in Tampa.
And Lorene, this was a very tough week and will dominate our show a lot, is that horrific shooting in Washington, D.C. I think it was a gut punch to every Jewish person in this country.
I mean, yeah, Mike, you and I talked briefly about it before the show started. You know, I woke up in the early morning hours Thursday around 4 a.m. and I saw the news and my heart just sunk, and I'm still mourning. I'm still in grief. I think, like many of us in the community, you know, that this is a time of great mourning and grieving. I can't even comprehend what the families are going through. So Yaron Lashinsky and Sarah Lynn Milgram, just this beautiful couple. It could have been any one of us. It could have been any one of our children, or our children, or our grandchildren. This beautiful couple, Yaron Lashinsky, they both worked for the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., and he was a German. His father was Jewish. His mother was Christian.
And his mom was Christian.
And he considered himself a Christian Zionist, and he dedicated his life to the state of Israel. He was a young man in his late 20s. He made Aliyah to Israel, served in the IDF, was dedicated to pursuing peace. And then you had Sarah Lynn Milgram from Kansas, this beautiful young girl, only 26 years old, who's working on her master's in Israel and Jerusalem, working also for the embassy, which is where the two of them worked. This lovely couple.
And they were
going
to get engaged next week in Israel.
I mean, it just...
I mean, his friends said he's the nicest guy he's ever met. She was just, a sweetheart. It's just...
just full of life. I mean, she was working on a project of, Palestinians and Jews working together to build relationships. And just, when you just see the pictures of these two young, beautiful souls, and just they're full of life and celebrating life in so many different ways. And, the fact that they had to remove 26 bullets from this young girl's body I think for all of us, I feel like this is a time of grieving, and it was really sort of a reminder that we're not that far from October 7th. And
even here in Tampa, where we do the show, and I know that people listen to us around the country, but when there are events held, there are armed guards, off-duty police officers, like at Charizetic or at the Glazer JCC. They are really, really worried about anybody that would come in. It's frightening that we have to live in a society like this.
And by the way, there were armed guards. I mean, this was an event being hosted by the American Jewish Committee, the AJC, at the Jewish Museum in D.C. And they had walked out of the building. They were standing outside. This is when that young man came up and just began to attack them and shoot them. And he didn't deny it. He's like, shouting, "Free, free Palestine. I did this for Gaza." No regret for just truly the execution of these two young, beautiful souls that the world is going to miss. But I think what was... And this man, by the way, his name was Elias Rodriguez, like a 30-year-old Hispanic from Chicago, who happened to also be a member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation, that, you know, had posted on one of their social media accounts before this event, an exterminate Zionist party for socialism and liberation. And they said, quote, the killer Elias Rodriguez, they were celebrating. These socialists were celebrating.
Oh, absolutely. What was it in New York? There was in the Bronx, there was an anti-Israeli group that just lauded his killings. It just said what a wonderful thing it was. I don't even know the name of the group, but it doesn't.
There are multiple groups on social media, multiple members of the Free Palestine, which is just the pure terrorism, just kill genocide of Jews. I mean, this is just pure anti-Semitism, just a different blood libelous label, praising this. And I want to read this because I think this to me was probably one of the craziest. So there's this young man, for instance, his name is Guy Christensen. He's a 19-year-old social media.
$3.4 million followers
on TikTok.
On TikTok.
And his handle's called Your Favorite Guy. He's a social media influencer from Pennsylvania. And concerning this brutal slaughter, he wrote to all his followers, I want to urge you first to support Elias's actions. He's not a terrorist. He's a resistance fighter. And the fact is that the fight against Israel's war machine, against their genocide machine, against their criminality, includes their foreign diplomats in this country. Where you will not hear me sympathize with war criminals, he said. I do not condemn the elimination of those two Zionist officials who worked at the Israeli embassy. Israel has live-streamed genocide to the entire world for the last 2 years. And you know, so I do, you know, we shouldn't be the actual DOJ and Leo Terrell, who is the senior counsel for civil rights at the Department of Justice. They're probing this and determining if there's any way that they could prosecute. There's something that they could do concerning this man's actions.
Well, I mean, he should get the death penalty. This person doesn't deserve.
Absolutely. I mean,
and you know, I tend to be liberal, but I am in favor. Whenever there is a murder, that there's no doubt the person did it. You know, I've been a witness at several executions and had no problem with it, believe it or not. I had a bigger problem being in court to see the family members of the victim having to testify and live that murder every single day. But yeah, this guy deserves the death penalty as far as I'm concerned.
Right. No. Jeannie Barrino, who oversees the DC office. I mean, she already said they're going for the death penalty. They're going after it. But I mean, the DOJ is also looking at these social media influencers who are actually calling for other people to emulate what Elias Rodriguez did. And what was it? And, you know, and that's really important. There's another young man also, the name Hassan Picker, who was on the other social media platform, Twitch, which a lot of the younger generation uses because they use it for video gaming and gaming, et cetera. He had 2.4 million followers, sort of also calling for people to emulate and to do something similar. And you had other organizations like several of the socialist organizations calling for others to call up arms. But what was interesting, and I don't want to miss this point, Mike, really important, the FBI found a manifesto in the home of Elias Rodriguez.
Oh, in Chicago home. Yeah, exactly.
And I want to be really clear. This manifesto is very consistent with the manifesto that was put out by multiple Columbia student organizations in the fall of 2024, at the beginning of this last school year, where they were saying, we're done with our just protests. We are calling for armed resistance. It's time to take it to the next level. We're calling, you know, they are calling to actually kill. So when they're saying, calling for intifada and jihad, they are actually calling for, which is what I've been saying all along, they're actually calling for physical violence, to kill. They want us dead, Mike. When they say kill the Jews, gas the Zionists, they really mean it. I do have to say this. Deborah Lipstadt, the former anti-Semitism czar under President Biden, she came out this week, she was on CNN, and she said, absolutely. She is 100% that their calls for free Palestine means a call for violence against
Jews. I would agree. Let me give a shameless plug, Lorene. I did a video of a piece we ran a couple of weeks ago. It was based on the words of Joshua Hoffman. And I put a video together that's on my Facebook page, Facebook at M. Deason, or on my YouTube page. Just go to Mike Deason. And it's about 8 minutes watch it. And I've had great reaction from Jews and Christians who just said, thank you for doing this. It's all about understanding who we are and why the world hates us. So
But we have to remember this, and we have to remember this whole free Palestine. I mean, that is just a smokescreen. These people don't care about the Gazans. They don't care about them. This is modern day blood libel, smearing Jews. And you know what? The eerie thing, Mike. And I obviously hate the United Nations. With such a passion, it is one of the most maniacal, bloodthirsty, evil organizations on the face of the earth. And you know, your own Leshinsky, this young man who just had such an amazing life ahead of him, who was brutally executed by this radicalized killer, bloodthirsty Elias Rodriguez. You know, he had just posted, you know, just the day before, condemning Tom Fletcher of the United Nations for writing an absolute falsehood. He was being interviewed by the BBC, and he made some radical, completely 100% false, blood libelous statement to the BBC. He said, 14,000 children are going to die in the next 48 hours.
And the BBC
Gaza.
Ran. They said it's good. 14,000 children are going to die within 24 hours.
48 hours.
Okay.
Lie. I mean, people understand this was the biggest BS lie, and it's
finally the BBC retracted that and said, "Oops, that's not true."
And the UN has also retracted it. Oops, it's not true. But guess what, UN? Guess what, Tom Fletcher? The blood of these two young, beautiful people are on your hands. I mean, this is blood libel. Like, this is the purest form of blood libel that you could see. I mean, it's right there, Mike, in our faces. And then you had this other woman. She's a famous Palestinian author, Susan Abu Lawa. She was praising the murders, you know, calling the two of these two young people baby killers and genociders and all kinds of horrific things. And then, you know, I can't even, like, there's just so much more going on this week when I think about what was happening in New York.
And we're going to get to more. We've got two pieces, recorded pieces, that are eye-opening about what's going on there. But part of the big problem is the, as I've said over and over, the Israeli PR problem, and that people are assuming that folks are starving in Gaza. And Laureen, I know you say you don't believe that anyone is starving, but when they show pictures of kids, there are kids that are on the edge of famine.
I got to say this again, Mike, and I say this every week. It is absolute BS, because this is the deal. Let me tell you something, because all the Hamas fighters and all the Palestinians that come out and praising when they're doing their kidnappers and everything else, they are fat, they are healthy, and they are full.
Now, that's the Hamas people. I'm talking about the kids.
It's the Palestinians. I got to say this, Mike. Again, enough food for over 2 million people for 8 months. Israel sent in over 1.8. Israel alone.
But they're not. They're not getting 1.8 million tons of food.
And it's getting into Gaza. Now, we do know
but
that
they're
Hamas,
not getting to the people. There are, Laureen, there are some people that
are
starving.
The majority, Mike, I'm going to say it again. I watched a video this week of a bakery in Gaza. I mean, the bread was stacked from 20 feet high, the ceiling, all the way down to the floor and all around. Fresh bread being baked
everywhere.
Some
people are getting food, others aren't.
Mike, if there are people that Hamas is torturing, which is probably a very tiny, small minority, that's exactly why Israel needs to get in and absolutely finish the final destruction of Hamas. But it's not Israel's fault, and it's not Israel's PR fault. Israel is not responsible for the fact that the mouthpiece of the media, the supermajority of the media, whether in Europe or here in America, it falls in line with the Hamas lies, whether it's Washington Post, whether it's the New York Times, whether it's MSNBC, I don't care.
But Laureen, there are kids that are hungry that aren't getting, you've got to admit that, Laureen.
I'm sorry, Mike. I really find it hard to believe, because I know the food. The grocery stores are fully stocked. And what I do know about this is that Hamas doesn't let any media, zero. They control all media from the AP to the BBC and every alphabet soup in between. They control what you can record. They control what you can do when you're in the Gaza Strip. And they're not going to let you put anything out that does not fall in line
Well,
with their propaganda.
Here's
Period.
something I don't understand that nobody has raised is that part of the Gaza Strip border is with Egypt. So why hasn't anybody said, well, Egypt, where is your food? I haven't seen that or heard that anywhere, but part of Gaza abuts Egypt, and they could easily send food in. And nobody has said to Egypt, well, what are you guys doing?
Nobody says to anyone. Nobody says to Ukraine, why aren't you feeding the Russian people?
Right, right.
So for every person who wants to say, Israel, you're not feeding the Gazans enough, even though the ambassador talks about the additional 1.8 million tons of additional food Israel alone has sent in. In addition to all the other organizations and aid and blah, blah, blah. I mean,
there is going to be theoretically a U.S. agency that's going to try to make sure the food.
Exactly. Israel's authorized it because we don't want the other aid organizations coming in that were associated with the UN because they were giving it to Hamas. And we need others that are going to guard and make sure that this is going to, that Hamas is not going to govern the food, because Hamas was then taking some of it and then selling it to people when it was supposed to be free. They were stealing and stashing in their tunnels. We know all this, but it's still, there was enough food for 2 million people for 8 months. That Hamas can't
but
steal 2 million.
But I don't think
million.
It's not getting to the people, Lori.
Mike, enough food for 2 million people for 8 months. Hamas doesn't have enough places to stash enough food for 2 million people for 8 months. And there's countless videos on social media as well that mainstream media doesn't want to play of their grocery stores being fully stocked.
Oh, but
Maureen,
you
bread,
got it. There
food,
are some
everywhere.
People that aren't getting food, and there is famine with kids.
There's not famine. And may I say this? I mean, that's the same blood libelous claim when they said, oh, the kids are all going to die of chlamydia or chlora or whatever it was. What was that disease? They said something in the water, the cholera or something. There's cholera. And Israel made sure that every child got a vaccination within 1 or 2 weeks. Every child had access to a vaccination. So this is, I'm not going for the blood libelous lies. I'm not. I'm just not, Mike, because I know better. Because you can't, Hamas is down to one regiment. And they don't have the capacity nor the ability to steal 8 months of food supply for 2 million people. I'm sorry,
but
they don't.
Israel is losing the public, as I always say.
It's
the
always,
public relations.
But it's not Israel's fault. We are 0.2% of the world population.
I know,
we
but
cannot,
even American Jews, American
because
Jews.
Because they listen to the media, Mike. I mean, let's talk about WAPO this week, which, oh my God, I hate WAPO. I hate the Washington Post.
That's
I
Washington
hate the New York
Post
Times.
For those who don't know the
I mean,
abbreviation.
You know, so this week, I mean, it's baffling. So last week in Israel, a young Israeli mother, 9 months pregnant, driving herself to the hospital to give birth, is gunned down, slaughtered, executed in cold blood by a crazy Palestinian terrorist, right?
Right.
The Washington Post literally writes an article. We didn't get to this last week. And instead of saying a terrorist killed this beautiful mother going to give birth, they're like, oh, you know, this is Israel's fault. I mean, he obviously was upset about what's going on. So he killed deer. So he took action. What? That was the Washington Post. This week, concerning the two young people who were just killed, Yaron Lischinsky and Sarah Lindblom, the Washington Post writes, the killings of two Israeli embassy staffers amplify confusion felt since October 7, 2023. Attacks about where Jews belong. What does that mean? Like, what? WTF is all I can say. This is the problem with mainstream media. And unfortunately, a majority of our community, Mike, relies upon mainstream media to get their news. And this is the problem when we're being fed
but
that.
But again,
we're not going
Israel
to other
doesn't
sources.
Help itself. Let me tell you, not allowing the blockade of food.
There was a blockade. Israel let the Israel.
I know they stocked it up.
Tons of
but
food.
No. Not letting it go in was a
that's
public
true,
relations
no,
debacle, Lori.
No, that's not true. We talked about this last week. We reported on it. There was 300 and something thousand tons of additional food and medical supplies that went in during those 6 weeks. What Israel was not allowing in were these other aid agencies because they were under the UN and associated with Hamas. And Israel's saying, enough with that. We're going to do it. So Israel was bringing in the aid.
It was
what we spoke
a
about last
dumb
week,
move, Lorraine.
To not allow UN suppliers to supply Hamas? What? No, Israel still supplied food, over 300,000 tons
no,
of
there
food
was a blockade
in those 6 weeks.
There was a blockade of
no,
food.
Mike, but not from Israel. We talked about this last week. We had the, we brought out Oz reporting the other, and Israel spoke and said, in this time period, the 6 weeks, we didn't allow the international aid agencies, EI, the United Nations, that prosperous Hamas, we didn't let them come in, but we, in the 6 weeks, supplied over 300 and something like 80,000 tons of additional food in that 6 weeks. And that's after the United Nations already said there was 8 months worth of supplies in there. So there was not a blockade, Mike. There's a blockade of other agencies coming in, but Israel was still doing it. But the media didn't talk about that.
Before October 7th, 89% of American Jews felt a close alliance with Israel. Today, it's 69% feel a close alliance with Israel. Israel is screwing up on the public relations end of it. If they're losing American Jews, there is something that is drastically wrong with the way
Here's a thought, Mike, because you say this in the video that you did. We don't control the media.
That's
and
true.
I know our enemies like to think we control the media, but the Jewish community that relies upon mainstream media, we Israel and Jews don't control the media. Israel put out the information.
I agree.
Israel did not hide the fact that they were supplying an additional 300 and something, like I said, 80,000 tons of food during that 6 weeks. They did not hide that fact. The media just chose not to report it. The media is strongly responsible for this. But I cannot blame Israel for it. To me, I feel so strongly that the media is so much behind this. But I also want to talk. There's a couple of things that happened this week. In New York City, there was a 20-year-old. His name is Tarek Bazrouk. He attacked three college students in New York City. He has been arrested. When he was arrested, the police found $750,000 in cash, a stash of weapons, stockpile of weapons, and a phone that was full of anti-Semitic, blood libelous, and anti-Zionist propaganda, similar to Elias Rodriguez. And then the other thing I also thought was really important that came out this week. So Canary Project, which is great. They love to expose all these liars on college campuses. So Moshan Mawadi, one of the other Columbia students who needs to show up before the immigration judge. They said, oh, Moshan Mawadi, he was going on social interview with media saying, oh, he just wants peace. He's not anti-Semitic. He's just seeking peace, blah, blah, blah. Well, they did a whole video. They got all the videos from social media. They found a bunch of different videos of him where he is violently
attacking
Jews. He's
definitely said anti-Semitic things. But, Lorraine, in this country, you're allowed to do that.
It was beyond that, Mike. First of all, he was saying in his interviews on mainstream media that the CNN and everybody else just went along with and didn't challenge or question or play any clips of him. Oh, this is all – we just were peaceful – this is not anti-Semitic, we love the Jews, blah, blah, blah. And then they show the videos of him, like, you know, F the Jews. I mean, he is calling for violence.
I understand that, and I hate that,
really,
but he's
important.
Allowed to do that in this
he's
country.
Not allowed, he's not allowed to incite violence, Mike. When he's calling for incitement of violence, nope, sorry, not protected.
He did not. I didn't see him inciting violence, Lorraine.
But he has, and we know that he has, because he was standing right next to Muhammad Khalil, who has, and there's countless violence, the evidence and videos of these guys doing it. But this guy is lying. And that goes back to your point, Mike, about the mainstream media. They don't fact check. They don't put out the other videos of him. They said, oh, well, you said that it's peaceful, but here you are saying all these things. Here you are doing this stuff. Here you are leading this violent mob of people against Jews. Like, what do you have to say about that? Are you still peaceful? I mean, that's the problem that we're dealing with in this country. And I think the other thing, I want to go back to the mayor of Chicago, because we had a debate about the mayor of Chicago a couple of weeks ago when he went wearing to a care event wearing his kippah.
Right.
And again, there is a woman on the city council, a Jewish woman, who just went nuts this week because the mayor
decided.
I wanted to open up the article. I got to find it.
Well, it doesn't matter her name, but whatever it is. Yeah.
But the point is that she exposes. She's like, listen,
He appointed someone who was clearly anti-Semitic.
Oh, it was tearing down hostage posters. Just has had all kinds of horrific things about Israel and the Jewish community on social media. And the Jewish community and the Jewish Community Relations Council, you know, they just had it with the mayor. Like, he is continuously engaged in contact and appointing people that are openly hostile to the Jewish community. This is a major problem in the city of Chicago. No one thought that he'd be worse than Lori Lightfoot or whatever, or whatever her name was.
Yeah, but yeah, Lightfoot. Yeah, now, I grew up in Chicago, and there's a lot of Jewish people there. I know,
and they're horrified with this mayor. He is substantially worse. I mean, this is unbelievable. And then you have this wacko, crazy guy, Joseph Neumeier, a German American citizen, who literally tried to firebomb the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. He has been arrested. He's been deported back to America. The FBI and the DOJ are holding him, and he will be prosecuted. But he's also made all kinds of death threats on social media. He was going to kill Trump. He was going to kill.
The guy was nuts. Lorraine,
our embassy.
Let's take a left turn and get back to our main story this week about the tragedy in D.C. And we're going to hear from Mike Huckabee, who is the ambassador to Israel, as well as the Israeli ambassador to the United States, Yekel Leitner, and talking about this. And he gets into a lot of other things. So let's take a listen.
Tonight we get reaction from the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. to last night's murder of these two embassy employees. Joining us is Ambassador Yekel Leitner. Mr. Ambassador, first of all, our condolences. Sorry for your loss. Let's start with these two young people. You obviously knew them.
I did, Brett. Thank you for having me this evening. These were a beautiful young couple. Yaron worked just a few doors away from my office. He was an advisor to one of our senior analysts. He was young, bright, enthusiastic, and just a pleasure to have around. And Sarah from Kansas, she was just sunshine. I mean, she'd walk into the room with her smile and red hair, and she'd just light up the room. Together, they were the perfect couple.
You know, we had the report by David Spund earlier about this suspect in custody, essentially, according to the FBI, confessing to it and obviously yelling Free Palestine. What does this tell you, big picture, about what's happening in the U.S.? And does it paint a larger picture than this incident, do you think?
Well, I think it does, Brett. The big picture is very important for us to understand. Free Palestine is actually what he said. And free Palestine is part of the chant that was heard across universities all across the country. And it included the chant, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, which is basically an eliminationist demand for the elimination of Israel. That's what Hamas tried to do on October 7th. And the if we're talking about the big picture, the outrage here is that we have international leaders like, the president of France, Macron, who's trying to press for an immediate recognition of a Palestinian state, as if the response to October 7th should be, to call it Palestine Liberation Day. So he's fueling these chants of the likes of this Elias Rodriguez, who thinks that he's going to implement it. The eliminationist policy regarding Israel by shooting Jews here in Washington.
Yeah, and obviously we'll follow this effort to prosecute the suspect very closely. Outside of that, can you just give us an update of how you see Israeli operations in Gaza, how your government is dealing with it, obviously opening up more humanitarian aid in recent days, but is there, from your point of view, an end in sight?
Brett, there's going to be an end in sight when we destroy evil. You can pursue coexistence, and that's what we want to pursue. We want to continue with the Abraham Accords, and the reason why Iran's proxies launched this war against Israel is try to prevent coexistence, prevent peace. And we can get back to a state of affairs where we're engaging more countries and more peoples in the region in the Abraham Accords if we destroy this evil. Look, this is a new Nazi regime. And you have to destroy Nazis before you can make peace. We're doing everything we possibly can on the humanitarian front. This is a blood libel that's been labeled against us by many agencies in the United Nations stating that we're not allowing humanitarian aid in. On the contrary, we have had 92,000 semi-trailers enter Gaza over the past year and a half. We're putting food into a war zone to people who are being occupied by terrorists who are using the food we're sending in to fire at our soldiers. It's unprecedented, really. And that's 1.8 million tons of food that we've actually delivered. Now, what we're trying to do now is create a situation together with our American counterparts. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has been established so that the food that we're sending in is not being co-opted by Hamas, but rather it goes directly to the people. So they're going to establish, this American company is going to establish four installations initially, up to eight installations ultimately, that will distribute directly to the people, not through Hamas, not through organizations, directly to the people, the aid that's needed most. 300,000 families will come through these distribution centers, and hopefully by the time that everything's set up and put in order, we'll have reached the point where Hamas will be defeated. They will either be defeated militarily or they will give up their guns, release our hostages. Our hostages are still being held in dungeons underground. Release the hostages and this war will be over. And either they're defeated militarily or they'll leave by boat to someplace else. But Hamas cannot rule any longer in Gaza.
Finally, Mr. Ambassador, you know, there were all kinds of reports about preparations Israel's making if the talks with Iran do not work between the U.S. and the Iranians about the nuclear program. That prompted Iran to put out a statement warning Israel, saying would view Washington as a participant in any such attack, and Tehran would have to adopt special measures to protect its nuclear sites and material if their threats continued, and the watchdog International Atomic Energy Agency would be subsequently informed of such steps. Iran saying that publicly. Where do you see talks? They resume tomorrow in Rome. I know there's skepticism inside Tel Aviv and inside your country. Where do you see that, and how do you see it going forward?
We hope and pray that the talks being led by Steve Witkoff will be successful. But the president has been very clear. President Trump has been very clear. Our prime minister, Netanyahu, has been very clear. And I think they're in lockstep on this. Iran cannot have a path to nuclear weapons. And as long as they have the option of enrichment, there's no need for enrichment. There are plenty of countries with civilian nuclear energy, which is generated by fuel that's brought into the country and then is exited the country. There's no need for enrichment. Enrichment only leads to one thing, a nuclear bomb. And if Iran has a nuclear bomb, they're going to use it. And if they have a nuclear bomb, that means all the proxies in the Middle East will be operating under a nuclear umbrella. It changes the balance of power in the world. And it is an existential threat for the state of Israel. We cannot allow, under any circumstances, for Iran to have a nuclear bomb for us. It's an existential threat.
So, Laureen, at the end, I thought it was interesting him talking about Iran and what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And I feel like, you know, I sent you a clip. I don't know if you saw it, Boots on the Ground. With Yair Pinto, the podcast that we've broadcasted things from Yair before, and he did a very in-depth thing.
I saw about the attack on Iran. They're thinking
Israel
there's. Yeah, I did see that. I watched that. Hey, when you send me things, I watch them.
So Israel is preparing. I mean, and rightfully so. Israel needs to be ready. Israel is preparing. Witkoff, who is the lead negotiator, has made it very clear multiple times there will be zero enrichment. That's the red line.
Nothing around it. The United States wants, and Iran says no way. I think we're at an impasse. I honestly think we're going to get a JCPOA number two.
I don't. I think we're going to get the Iranian nuclear facilities knocked out.
Well,
I do believe we're going to
say
that.
The thing that's scary, Laureen, is Iran has said that if Israel attacks their nuclear facilities, they'll consider it an attack by the United States. And they're crazy. So I don't know what will happen then.
I do know this, is that Iran is significantly weakened. And if you take away their nuclear stockpiles, that government, that radicalized Islamic extremist government, is really going to have its balls cut off. I mean, it already has had, Israel has already sort of decapitated it in so many ways. And I think at that point, I think what you're going to see are people in Iran rising up.
Well, the Iranian people certainly don't agree with the leadership there. I mean, it was a progressive nation where, women could drive, women didn't have to wear the burqas and all. It's just crazy. But we have so much more about the shootings in D.C., and we're going to do that right after we take this break. This is The Third Opinion. We'll get back to more about the horrendous shooting in Washington, D.C. in a moment. But have you checked out our webpage, where you can find out more about our hosts and hear previous editions of The Third Opinion? And don't forget, you can get your Third Opinion wherever you download your podcasts. And now, back to The Third Opinion podcast. Welcome back to The Third Opinion, Two Jews, Three Opinions on WKDW in the podcast. I'm Mike Deason.
This is Loreen in Tampa.
So we have a piece coming up led by Kellyanne Conway, who is the spokesperson for the Trump administration.
Now, let me say, I know you
believe everything she says in this. Now, we run pieces where you say, I disagree with everything she says. I have some real problems with this piece, but Loreen wants to run it, and I'm fine with that. But a couple of things that we have to say beforehand. Kristi Noem is talking about going after the colleges. She didn't know what habeas corpus was, which is really important in this week, that people get to know what they're being charged with. Secondly, Kellyanne Conway puts down a CNN journalist who was asking a question that really had some relevance about it. Her name was Sarah Sidner. She is an award-winning journalist, and Kellyanne Conway was just pointed out as just a twister of facts. She talked about alternative facts when she was working for Trump before she went to work with CNN, and she was forced out of the government because she violated the Hatch Act, which means you can't come.
I have no idea what this has anything to do with the piece.
We got Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne Conway putting out things here. I just want to say I disagree with.
Okay, you made your point. Let's get to the piece. So let me just talk about it, because I gives a crap about what you just said. Okay. I mean, honestly, this is about Aaron Cohen and Brooke Goldstein.
And I have problems with Aaron Cohen as well. One other thing that she said is that the judges are keeping the president from getting his initiatives done. No, the judges are keeping the president from violating the Constitution.
First of all, you and I are not going to agree on that. I actually do believe we have a lot of activist judges that have overstepped their boundaries
violated the Constitution. The grifter-in-chief with his multi-million-dollar dinner the other night and the plane from Qatar. We'll get to the piece.
We're running out of time, so I would like to introduce it, because none of that is relevant to the point of this piece and what we're talking about.
Let's go.
She's interviewing Aaron Cohen, former intel officer for Israel, and he focuses a lot on cybersecurity and AI. And as we talked about, these two radicals, for instance, on TikTok and on Twitch, trying to track and find these people that are trying to radicalize, and really goes into the depth of this is a fifth front of a war, this ideological war, which we are in. We see it at Harvard. We see it at Columbia. We see it at all our college campuses. We are in an ideological warfare. And I've been saying that for a long time, because it's very consistent with Hitler Youth and how they understood you steal the mindset
that
of a young generation.
The courts have also said the president has overstepped his bounds at Harvard, as you well are aware.
And Harvard, Harvard screwed up again this week, and we'll talk about that as well. But he's talking about, it is an ideological warfare. You're talking about Qatar, Harvard has taken obscene amount of money from Qatar, and as well as from other foreign governments that are influencing it, as is Columbia and the others. And then you also have Brooke Goldstein, who runs the Lawfare Project. She is the one, she's been doing this for over a decade, talking about how these ideologues, these pro-radicalized Islamicists utilize American laws in our own court systems to attack Jews, and that and how they've been utilizing it. And she talks about this, and she, you know, so both of these, I thought there's a really important piece, because I think this is, we're in a war, like whether we realize it or not, we are in an ideological war right now, Mike. And the fear is that we're going to see more shootings like we saw this past week. And as a Jewish community, we need to say enough is enough. So this is why I think this is a really important piece for us to listen to.
Let's listen.
And tonight, much of the hate and hysteria on the left can easily be traced right back to America's college campuses, where America, capitalism, and Israel are all routinely vilified. Today on CNN, a former Columbia University student who just so happened to witness last night's murders here in Washington, D.C., spelled out the cold, hard truth. Take a look.
But what I saw in his eyes, I mean, I went to Columbia for grad school, and I saw the same thing in his eyes as I saw in the eyes of all the protesters at Columbia. Nothing different between him and them.
But they did not create this horrific shooting. They did not, you know, they didn't shoot.
They gave permission. They gave the permission. And they have called for this. They have called for Intifada revolution, which is the same thing he yelled last night.
Do you worry that there will be a conflation, though, of the two, those people who are speaking their mind, who really care about what is happening in Gaza, and those people who are like this person who did this horrific shooting, who intend to do harm?
A conflation. I mean, they are calling for Intifada. At Columbia University, they call for Intifada constantly. They're not quietly. They're loud. They're loud. You can hear it. They make recordings of themselves. So what's the difference?
Are you afraid?
Yes.
What will we do about that?
While many Democrats and so-called journalists like that one put their heads in the sand, the Trump administration is fighting back. Just today, Trump stripped Harvard's student visa program for failing to cooperate with the DHS investigation into pro-terrorist conduct at campus protests. We've all seen it. And not long ago, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem issued this warning to all colleges and universities. Watch this.
Harvard brought these consequences upon themselves. They have promoted and allowed violent activity on campus. They have allowed anti-Semitism, participation with CCP and Chinese infiltration and influence on their campus, and they haven't protected their students. This should be a warning to every other university to get your act together. Get your act together, because we are coming to make sure that these programs that you are facilitating an environment where students can learn, where they're safe, and that they're not discriminated against based on their race or their religion.
Here now with more, Israeli Special Ops veteran Aaron Cohen and the Executive Director of the Lawfare Project, Brooke Goldstein. Thank you both for joining me. Aaron, I'll start with you. Are you at all surprised with the hate that unfolded itself here in Washington, D.C. tonight? These two lovely people, God rest their souls, may their memory be a blessing, gunned down in the prime of their lives?
No, first of all, it's good to see you, Kelly, and I'm not surprised at all. I've been saying this for the last 2 years. The only direction that all of this calling for the Intifada is going to go up, and eventually it's going to hit violence, and that's what has happened. But I want to talk to the root of what I believe is behind all of this, all of the rhetoric, all of the chanting. What we're seeing right now, and I want to talk to this from the counterterrorism space, isn't just chaos on campus, Kellyanne. This is called fifth generation warfare. No missiles, no soldiers. This is ideological infiltration, psychological manipulation, and algorithmic warfare. And this is how modern enemies of America fight. They're not storming our borders. They are hijacking our platforms. Iran, China, other hostile actors are physically weaponizing social media, which has radicalized the youth and created this destabilized movement throughout our culture. This is actually what's happening, and it's turned Americans against each other, from within. And that's what this anti-Semitism is. This is where it's coming from. And that's the root of these protests. This is the modern battlefield.
Scary. Brooke Goldstein. So students go to campuses, we would think, to learn, you know, the old reading, writing, arithmetic. Now they just hear hate, violence, and they're incited to do that on their own. And what Aaron is laying out for us, I'm sure you are all too familiar with as well. But I wanted to ask you, when the president is taking action today, for example, against Harvard, and we've all seen what's happened at Columbia and Penn and other universities, some of our elite universities accept 4 to 5% of all their applicants. What else can be done as a culture for us to make sure that we are breaking the back of this on our college campuses, where so much of this political violence on the left is fomenting?
Thank you, Kellyanne, excuse me, for having me on tonight. And really, I think Aaron is right. This is the greatest subversive influence campaign that this country has ever seen. We have a major problem of terror, pro-terror radicalization happening on our campuses. We have foreign funding terror cells. We have judges preventing the Trump administration from enforcing the law, from getting rid of people who are here illegally. Excuse me. And what we saw last night is a direct result of the unchecked spread of this blood libel. These two young people who were celebrating life, who were about to get engaged, were gunned down in cold blood. And you know what, Kellyanne? It could have been me. It could have been any of my friends or colleagues. Just last night, I was at a fundraiser in Miami for Zaka, the nonprofit organization that is tasked with picking up the dead body parts and the blood of Jews murdered and slaughtered and killed and burned alive on October the 7th. It was the same group picking up the blood on the streets of D.C. after this attack. Because whether you're Jewish in Israel or you're Jewish on the streets of America or Paris or London, it doesn't matter. This is Jew hatred. It is not political. And when Pam Bondi was asked this morning, what is the motive of the shooters, though we don't know, he said it himself. He said he's doing this for Gaza, yes, to free Palestine. He says it himself. What pro-Palestine Palestinian advocacy is genocidal Jew hatred. And what is so chilling, and I'll end with this, is that Yaron's last post was calling out the United Nations for spreading blood libels. They say that this was a lone shooter. It wasn't. He had co-conspirators. Everyone in the mainstream media, everyone at the United Nations, every single Ivy League professor, every social media influencer and left-wing politician that's been spreading blood libels, untruths to dehumanize Jews, to delegitimize Israel, is responsible for the death of these two young people. And only President Trump and God can stop this. And we have to support everything he is doing in the Department of Homeland Security, and especially the Justice Department, which, by the way, just filed a statement of interest in the Lawfare Project's lawsuit against the City University of New York, because this is not free speech. When speech turns into assaults, harassment, threats, actions, violations of civil rights, and ultimately death, it is not protected in this country.
Well, that's really the issue here, Aaron. Brooke lays it out so beautifully. People will say, well, I have free speech rights. I can believe as I believe. I can worship as I want. But when you have Ilhan Omar, can't even give a condolence to the families of these two young people, regardless of their religion, their gender, their socioeconomic status, their race. She's asked about the shooting last night of this couple. It could have been any couple. But because they were Jewish, it seems to me, Ilhan Omar, who's got an anti-American, anti-Semitic recent past, can't express condolences. What do we do about folks like that serving behind me in Congress?
Well, I don't think there's anything you can do about her specifically, but what I can do is I can talk about what can be done. Look, Ilhan Omar is an enemy of the state. I don't know how else to put that. She's anti-American. She's anti-Israel. Her and her squad want to see this country destroyed. I almost feel like she's part of it. I feel like she's literally trying to serve Somalia over the American interests. And this is America first time. And I want to say this, and I want to say this to anybody on President Trump's team who may be listening. What we can do, and again, this speaks to the systematic hijacking of the algorithm, Kellyanne, it's time for the United States to partner with the private sector and put together a full spectrum AI platform designed to predict and prevent domestic threats before they strike. from digitally radicalized youth to these ideological lone wolves. This kid is a Hispanic kid, 30 years old from Chicago, has never been to Gaza, doesn't speak a word of Arabic, yet he's calling for the death. Yet he murdered two Jews in cold blood, executed them, which means the only way to get at this is to detect the pre-attack behavior, flag signs of the radicalization, and support law enforcement through a real time behavioral threat intelligence AI driven program that partners with DHS, local law enforcement, school districts, and even parents, and be able to upload that AI chat with Israeli special operations grade doctrine fused with that advanced AI. And that program unleashed becomes the domestic version of NORAD, but not built for foreign missiles, built for internal threats that start online and in violence. The threat has evolved. We've got the AI now. It's time for law enforcement to evolve and catch up. This chatbot gets put together. You now have a system, a NORAD to blanket every school, every law enforcement agency, and finally, AI-driven behavioral detection with Israeli quality LL to be able to thwart these threats.
Thank you. The technology is certainly there, and the rank anti-Semitism, the raw hatred and political violence, these persons were targeted because they were Jewish. Brooke Goldstein and Aaron Cohen, thank you very much.
Now, I got to tell you, I thought that Cohen was crazy, and I'm concerned about using AI and overstepping the bounds of legality, Lorene.
Well, first of all, you don't have a right of privacy on social media, so it doesn't exist. And then beyond AI is really important when you're dealing with, we see this everywhere. There are too many lone wolves. There are too many people. These ideologues are calling for, and we just saw it again this week, their manifestos calling, like the Socialist Party in Chicago, you know, saying they're having a party to exterminate Zionists and celebrating Elias Rodriguez.
But
they're
Lorene,
calling for other people to emigrate.
You realize you are in the minority of Jewish people. The majority of Jewish people believe that Trump's activity against Harvard and all the other colleges creates more anti-Semitism.
No, well, let me just say this. What I do know is that I'm actually in the majority of Jews in the state of Florida that voted for him, and we support what he's doing. This is why
you are in the minority, Lorene.
I'm in the
Most
majority
Jews
of my state.
That Trump is
I'm in the majority in the state of Florida, and I'm in the majority in the city of New York. So I actually disagree with that, Mike. And beyond
India,
that,
United States
doing,
of America,
exactly
most
what
Jews
I voted
think
for.
That Trump is anti-Semitic.
And you know what?
Not.
And then you know what's amazing? Because this guy who did one of the first things he did with the anti-Semitism task force and has done more for the Jewish people in this community in the first 100 days than Biden in 4 years.
You gotta be kidding me. Mr. Grifter, Mr. 34 convicted felonies, Mr. Felon in the White House.
I'm so excited.
Give me a break.
You know what? I'm so excited to do this, Mike. You know what I'm gonna do? Because he's done everything that I voted for him to do, he's done. Next week I'm gonna read through the entire list of every executive order, every action, everything
we can do that
to support the Jewish state in Israel.
Lorene. But you hear that music? We are out of time. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. We're recording it the night before. I hope you have a good week.
And next week is Shavuot. Tonight is Mike and I are recording Sunday night. It's the 43rd day of Kanye Omer, for those of you who are keeping track. And Shavuot is literally just a week away. So for all who celebrate Hatzimah, and happy Memorial Day. And we will talk to you next week.
See you next week. That's The Third Opinion. I'm Mike Deason.
This is Lorene in Tampa.
Bye. That's our show for this week. Hope you'll join us again next week. And thanks for listening.